Slide 17 of interview number 8.
Before I answer your question, Eleanor, there are a couple other comments I'd like to make about Lake Buell. First of all, I want to really stress again the unusual quality, really, of the leadership that our federation, at least, has had over the years from lay people. Well, it's been duplicated in other federations, I would assume. This is true, by the way, both in men and women. But the leadership, plural, has really consistently been extremely generous, been capable of dealing with very difficult problems in a very thoughtful way, and on the whole have managed to consistently for many years arrive at what has proved to be usually very sensible solutions to frequently very difficult problems. And they have managed to do that because they've been intelligent, because they've understood the value of compromise and so forth. Oddly enough, in this week's Newsweek, there is a article by Leah Kako talking about how important compromise is in both business and public life. It's very interesting because it gives the impression of a man who drives ahead. I didn't want to talk about lay people and my relationship with them without discussing certainly the women. First of all, I did, I think, over the years, have a very close relationship to many different women and to women as a group in many of their activities, and for many years acted as what might be called an unofficial but, you know, professional advisor to the women in the construction and development of their annual meeting, which used to be a very big affair with seminars and so forth, as well as helping with their leadership development program and so forth. And I always had tremendous affection for, as well as respect for, the women, although I want to make this comment, and I'm sure Sylvia will be interested to hear this. Over the years, the women, and I think it's changing now, I assume it's changing, but over the years, the women had a very great deal of difficulty, I thought, in holding their own when they came into a committee process where they very often sat side by side either with their own husbands or, for that matter, with men who had very substantial business achievement and so forth. So that with very few exceptions, I maybe could name one or two, with very few exceptions, when we got into the social planning and budgeting process, for instance, or even to some extent perhaps at the board level, when decision-making took place, the women were timid. I think that's the best word. They certainly were reticent anyway. What they said afterwards and how they viewed both decisions and process and so forth, I was never quite sure. But it's only been in recent years that the women, thank goodness, have begun really to assert themselves. It's, of course, obviously, to some extent, because of the feminist movements, to some extent, because beginning to move into the Federation, professional women who are much more accustomed to give and take with their counterparts, their male counterparts, and so forth. And there are a lot of different factors which obviously we don't have to go into. federation has not yet had a woman president, but in other federations that has already happened, and I assume it will happen one of these days here in Pittsburgh. But the women on their own, in many ways, I thought had at least as good, if not more, insight into many, many of the problems and programs that the Federation either faced or undertook. And I used to regret, though there wasn't much you could do about it, I used to regret that said that in some of the smaller committee meetings, women were as restrained as they were. I'll make another comment about that too, and that is that there's never been any question in my mind. I never understood why. I never understood whether. I'll tell you what I'm talking about in 1 second. I never understood why this should have been. But I found that women had a gift for speaking, or extemporaneous speaking particularly, that the men did not possess. Time after time, I would watch a woman participant in the Federation get on her feet, so to speak, and speak fluently and skillfully, and either with notes or even without notes. Whereas if men tried it, more often than not, they were halting and had difficulty. That's one of the reasons why I wrote so many speeches for individuals, because my opinion, it led to, well, a much better presentation. I don't know if Sylvia would verify this or not, but it was always my impression that within the women's division, the women valued, I thought, inappropriately value extemporaneity for its own sake. They always felt that the mere fact that someone was up there speaking extemporaneously lent a vitality and an informality and so forth to a process, and that having somebody read removed some of that. Whereas I, for instance, not only believed in a written speech and believed in having it read, unless you happen to have some extraordinarily skillful speaker around, but I used to want to pass around, and in many instances would, used to want to pass around copies of what was being read so that the listener could actually follow what was being read, so that the content was really very clearly visible and able to be dealt with. It seemed to me, at least in some of my own presentations, by the way, I'll talk about that in 1 second, and that was always a habit of mine, and that always led, I thought, to a much more effective presentation. I will say, I didn't say it before, that at the retreats that our leadership had annually, there about 25 to 30 of the so-called leaders of the Federation would get together once a year at either a private residence or now at the McCollin. Usually there is a presentation by a professional. One is usually on campaign and one is on what might be called planning problems. And in many of those retreats, I made presentations. And if I say so myself, some of them I thought were pretty good. And in those instances, I say, I tried to make a formal presentation and asked individuals if they would follow me while I read, and some did, some didn't. Getting to your question, Eleanor, about accomplishments and so forth, I suppose that if I were to organize my thinking in response to that question, there are almost categories of accomplishment which I would this. Number one, and it's directly relevant to what we were talking about before, to a large extent, by the way I'm qualifying it, number one may have been that my most valuable contribution over so many years was, and I'll use this term, was an enrichment of the lay people with whom I interacted. The reason I use the word enrich is because I think it's a very broad term, encompassing an accumulation of knowledge, insight into problems, insight into how you deal with problems, an understanding of Jewish values, and perhaps above all else, an understanding of the objectives of Federation, how they were changing, which they have, and how the Federation and its objectives related to the community. So I'm using enrichment in a very broad sense. But because in the relationship with lay people in so many different contexts, all these different factors, that's the right term, were constantly at play, the lay people with whom I dealt, if I were able to be effective, the lay people with whom I dealt did increase their knowledge and understanding if I did my job properly. So I would say that that would be the number one. As a matter of fact, if you don't, since it's going into, so you say, into the basement somewhere where people won't see it, it just so happens that what I'm talking about was in a sense exemplified. I saw Leon Netzer just a few minutes ago, right before we started, who has just been elected president of the Federation, and with whom I had a very close relationship for a good many years. He was chairman, for example, of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee for 4 years. I had a very close relationship with him, and on top of that, there were other areas where I a lot of contact with him. It was a very close professional relationship and so forth. And when we were saying hello and so forth, someone was there, well, I think it was Beverly, it doesn't make any difference. And he turned to Beverly and said, he's the man that taught me everything I know about Federation. And went on.
Well, that's very rewarding to hear that.
Well, I wouldn't normally reported, except that
I think it's very important.
Well, whether it is or not, but it does exemplify exactly the point I'm making, which is that if the professional is able to interact properly with the layperson, particularly if it's over a long span of time, he has the capacity to do that. That's particularly true of some lay people. Leon happens to be one of them, who to some extent restricted his involvement. I mean, he did go to some national meetings, but didn't go to a lot of them and so forth. Someone like Sylvia, I don't know if he could say the same thing, if she could say the same thing, because Sylvia has, if you don't mind the personal references, Sylvia, or Sydney, for example, for that matter. I'm not so sure that Sydney could say the same thing, because Sydney's contacts have been broader than someone like Leon, particularly at this stage of the game. But Sydney has participated by now rather substantially on the national scale. He was chairman, or president rather, of local agency and so forth. That was not true of Leon. So that it's a, you know, it would not be true of all. But there are certain other lay people where I would be able to say the same thing. So that would be a number one accomplishment. Number two accomplishment, of course, would be the concrete programming or activities which I at least felt were to a large extent attributable to my own personal activities. For instance, housing for the elderly. There were two people, there's no question about this in my mind at least, there were two people who were responsible for whatever housing for the elderly we now have in Pittsburgh. One was Harry Kamen and the other one was myself. I won't attempt to apportion credit, so to speak, between the two of us. But certainly when it comes to housing for the elderly, as I've already said, so I don't want to stress it, I had a great deal to do with it. Same thing was true with the Chronicle. And, you know, and the whole list of other programs and activities and so forth. So that I did have a great deal to do with specific programs and so forth. I should be able to say, and I have no way of measuring this, someone in my position should be able to look back and talk in terms of what impact he had upon fellow staff, younger ones and so forth. I really have very little way of measuring that. I did not devote myself as much as I might have to a lot of personal relationships with staff as I look back on it, although my relationships were certainly good and sound as far as I know and so forth. But whether any of the staff people would say what Leon said, that everything they know, they I don't know. I don't think that would be true in recent years, although I don't know. It would be interesting to get an assessment from a Harvey Sloan, for example, as to what he thinks my contribution to his growth and development has been. I hired Harvey, who knew nothing about the Federation, not too much about Jewish affairs for that matter and so forth, when I hired him 10 or 12 years ago, and he responded to an ad we had in the press, and he has slowly but surely developed and so forth. And over many years, he was what might be called, to some extent, I don't know if I'd call it a protege, but yes, I would call it a protege because I was very deliberately attempting to expand his understanding, his responsibilities, and his whole development. I don't know whether he recognized it or understood it or not. I don't remember anymore how often, if ever, I talked to him about it. One of the questions that's been asked of me a great deal, and I won't dwell on it, but you know, it was a question, why never executive vice president, executive director? I don't know whether the thought has ever occurred to Sylvia or not, but quite a few people over the years have asked me that. I never wanted it for a variety of reasons, which no point in putting on the record. When Bob Hiller left in 1965, it's the first time I think I ever put this on the record or ever mentioned it to anybody for that matter, but when Bob Hiller left in 1965, Saul Shapiro, who was not yet president, but he was soon to be president, who was therefore one of the principal personalities at the time, did come to me and ask me whether I would be interested in being considered for the position. And I said no. I really didn't give it much thought. I wasn't really interested. I never knew whether Saul was doing this purely on his own initiative, whether he had discussed it with other people, whether there was a possibility that if I had said yes, that there would have been a lot of interest on the part of the leadership of the Federation and so forth. But for my own reasons, I decided that that was not a route that I wanted to follow. That matter, I suppose, if I had been willing to leave Pittsburgh, I could have probably maybe had a job as an executive somewhere else, because I was fairly highly regarded nationally, even though I didn't participate much in national affairs. But I could have got pretty good references from Pittsburgh in those days anyway. A fourth accomplishment, by the way, that as I said, if you don't mind, I hope the refreshing immodesty. I think, and you'll have to make your own assessment of this, but I think that I presented to the lay community, and I think this was important, but it hadn't really occurred to me till just now. It really hadn't. I don't think that he ever really consciously thought this through. Maybe I did once upon a time. But I think I presented to the lay community an example of a certain kind of professional, which I think was very important to the stability and the image of the Federation itself. There was a period there, particularly in the later years of Jerry Soroker's tenure here, when there were a good many people who weren't happy with Jerry and so forth, when a great many people did, you know, used to make comments to me about my value to the Federation, and matter of fact would say to me that I was the person who was, so to speak, holding the Federation together, so forth and so forth. And I don't know whether they were thinking of it in terms of what I knew and what I did and so forth, or whether, without even realizing it, they were saying that there was a person in the Federation of a high position, relatively speaking, who projected an image of, as I say, if you don't mind the immodesty, projected an image of integrity and loyalty to the Federation, understanding, and so forth. I don't want to dwell on that, obviously. But I think that, as I think back over that, I think that's something that probably was very important, and something that had a great deal of meaning and value. One of the areas where I always felt disappointed in a way, and never really was able to accomplish nearly as much as I would have liked to have accomplished, was in dealing with Federation agencies. To a large extent, relationships with executives of fellow agencies normally run to the executive of the Federation, but not completely. Social Planning and Budgeting Director also has reason to have relationship with fellow agencies. They may or may not be with the executive, it depends. In my case, because I've been around a long time and had some status and so forth, I was able to have relationships with the directors, particularly at a certain point in my career. But they were all old timers, so to speak, like me. And they were all fixed in their ways. They had very strong vested interests and so forth. So that many of the agencies, I'm sure there aren't that many, but many of the agencies I had great trouble having real impact on the agency directors and the agencies themselves, therefore. And I'll be very specific. Aaron Kessler, for instance, no one has impact on him, as Sylvia will testify. He and I had some bitter struggles, and we had periods of close contact. Actually, with Aaron, what would usually happen was when I would reach the point where our relationship had become frayed and difficult, I would retreat and ask the executive director to take over, and he would have relationships for a while, and then that would become frayed and so forth, and then I would move in again. I don't know if I told you the story or not, but I don't mind telling you. Maybe I put it to you before, but at least I did, and I always relished this, I must admit, really intimidate Aaron once, because Aaron, great ploy for many, many years, was to intimidate the people that he dealt with. Very deliberate. And also it came natural. But I had lunch with him one day, and which a few years ago, in which he was berating Federation. And I said to him, I didn't come to have lunch for this purpose, and if you continue this, I'm going to leave. This is right at the beginning. And Aaron continued, and I warned him, and he continued, and I got up and started to leave. And asked the waiter, waitress, I mean, in fact, I called the waitress over and told her I was leaving and so forth. And Aaron came very plaintive, it was really startling, very plaintive, and said, "What did I say?" You know, and retreated then very quickly, and so I sat down and so forth. I didn't intimidate him. After that, we had a much different kind of lunch. Saul Abrams is another one who went back many, many years, longer than I do for that matter. We graduated law school together, interestingly enough. By the way, as an aside, I never knew how much impact the fact that I had a lawyer, that I was a lawyer, how much impact that had on my image. I never talked about it, and as far as I knew, very few people knew that I was a lawyer, and when the subject ever came up, people would express surprise. But in the circle of top leadership, so to speak, I have a feeling that they did know that I was a lawyer by background, and that that lent to my image more luster, if I can use the term, than if I had been a social worker years ago. Don't know if it's true anymore, but there was a time, you know, like a doctor, when a lawyer did have, in certain circles at least, a certain kind of credibility. I won't go into the limitations on that word credibility when it comes to attorney, but at least many people, business people, women and so forth, felt that an attorney was a person who was experienced and what might be called problem solving and had a way of thought and so forth. And it may very well be, as I think about it, that the fact that I was a lawyer might have had something to do with what I always felt, although maybe incorrectly, it was a sort of special kind of image that I probably had. And the same thing, going back to executives again, as far as Jewish Family and Children's Service is concerned, which was a wonderful agency when Nate Goodman first came here, but in his later years, Nate became static, that's as good a word as any, and almost disinterested. He's very close to me, by the way, and as a person, I mean, much closer to me as a person than either Saul Abrams or Aaron Kessler ever were. But even as close as we were personal, and there was a social relationship even, at the end, I struggled very hard with Nate to attempt him to attempt to arouse him from what had become a very passive attitude on his part. And As a matter of fact, after he was replaced, finally, the agency did have a great transformation along lines which I had always wanted, and I don't know whether those lines initiated to some extent because I had already been pushing for them, or because they just came natural. I think the latter rather than the former, I don't think.
Yes. When you speak of Nate, what is his last name?
I'm sorry, Nate Goodman. Who was executive director of, you're right, I'm sure Sylvia put the name in, because Sidney was a president of that agency at one time. When Sidney was president of it, the agency was still a very vital and active agency, full of reach out into the general community, by the way, and had done some very remarkable things, it really had. As a matter of fact, the agency recently was cited by the Pittsburgh Foundation as being responsible for one of what was the 20 of the outstanding programs of the last several decades. So that it had a remarkable record and so forth. But in its later years, as I say, Nate became static. And again, that was a source. So that, generally speaking, as I look back over the agencies and so forth, and the center was another one, where by the, for lots of reasons, very, very difficult to have impact on. But